All right, good morning, everyone.
Good morning, Rabbi.
So thank God, as they say, first world problems. We might be growing out of this room. So we'll have to evaluate. Stay tuned.
As long as we're growing up.
As long as we're growing up and not down. That's right. As Hami says, it's better than the alternative. Okay, so what I want to do today is do one of the most, arguably, famous prakam of Tehillim. Mm-hmm. Certainly one of the most famous ones that we say on a regular basis, and that's chapter 121. Shir lamalos esayinai el arim. When you lift your eyes up to the heaven. And again, I think we're all familiar with this. It's something that in our Sidurim are found after Shabbos Mincha. Many have the custom to say Tehillim after Mincha. And certainly in our sense, it's become accepted that this, certainly 130, maybe we'll do a future week, are the ones that you generally say when you're in a time of distress, when you're in a time of need. And so I want to spend a few minutes.
I say it when I'm on the airplane.
You say it while you're on the airplane. Good. We'll get to why you say it. Molly is a very righteous woman, which I knew already. But now this has simply confirmed that. Not only is Molly a righteous woman, she clearly has studied this chapter of Tehillim in depth to understand why she says it on the airplane. So let's jump right in. What I want to do is we'll read it quickly, as we generally do, to get a general sense of it. It's not very long. And then we'll go through it a little verse by verse and understand some of the deeper themes that are involved in it. So we say at the beginning of chapter 121, Shir Lamalos, Esayinai El Harim, Me'ayin Yavo Ezri. So you're lifting to Shir Lamalos. What are these Malos? So again, the commentaries very famously point out that there were 15 steps in the Beis HaMikdash that the Levim would go up, that they would climb. For each one of those steps, that there was a different Shir HaMalos, and those correspond to the 15 Shir HaMalos that begin in chapter 120 and are going to go on for a number of chapters. Okay, Rav Hirsch very beautifully points out that the word Shir HaMalos, he says, here follows a series of 15 psalms, all of which are able to help one strive upward, right? Shir Lamalos, a song of ascents. So he says, to ascend from the depths of misery into which he has fallen as the result of adverse, sad circumstances. So these 15 psalms are designated specifically for someone who feels that they're in a low point. Shir Lamalos, these are songs, these are psalms that are meant to lift us up. And that's why it's a shir, right? Why is it called a song? Because the same way a song lifts a person up, so too these chapters of Tehillim are meant to lift a person up. And therefore, even when you feel at those low points in your life, and you recognize the potential, the capacity to be lifted up from that moment, so that's a reason to sing. Right? It's not where you are, it's the trajectory of where you are going. As we learned all the way in the first class, the word ashrei. What is the word ashrei? The word ashrei, so we translate it as happy. But Rav Hirsch translated it as, anyone remember? No one remembers?
Good question.
Like eight weeks ago?
That's a lot.
So Rav Hirsch says, the word ashrei means a progression. That you're happy when you feel like you're on a journey to a destination. Right? When you're stagnant, when you're standing still, when you don't feel like you're progressing anywhere, that's when a person feels despondent. But the word ashrei, he says, means to step forward, to progress. And when a person feels like they're progressing, when they feel like they're on a progress, when they feel like they're striving forward, advancing, that is when a person feels ashrei. That's when they feel praiseworthy. So you combine that Rav Hirsch with this Rav Hirsch. Shir Lamalos, why is it a song? Because we're ascending. It's not where I am now, but I feel like I'm on a good trajectory. Okay, so we're two words in, and we already have a very beautiful idea. Shir Lamalos. So this is a song directly to someone who is ascending. And what do we say to that person, or what does that person say? Esayinai el harim, I lift my eyes up to the mountains. Me'ayin yavo ezri. Where is my help going to come from? So the pasuk assumes a few things. Number one, it assumes that the person is in distress. And we do not know why the person is in distress. Right, me'ayin yavo ezri, from where my help come, assumes that I need help. And that's obviously the million-dollar question that we have to figure out. Different commentaries are going to offer different suggestions. What is this person in need of help from that he is looking up to the mountains as the source for that help. Yeah. I understand. That's what I said, the Levim. That's Levim climb the steps. Yeah, the Levim in the Beit HaMikdash. That's what the many of the Mefarshim point out. Okay? So this person asks this question, whether it's a rhetorical question, not a rhetorical question. And then in Pasuk Bet, in the second verse, Ezri Me'im Adonai Oseh Shamayim V'aretz. The help is going to come from Hashem, creator of the heaven and the earth. Now, it almost sounds like he is answering his own question. Right? Sometimes you have that question, Me'ayin Yavo Ezri, and then Me'im Ezri Me'im Hashem Oseh Shamayim V'aretz. The Radak reads this entire chapter of Tehillim as a story of exile. Okay? The Radak says already at the last chapter, but it carries over into this chapter as well. He says, where is my last chapter? But the Radak says, yeah, he says, V'yesh lefarish od ki ma'alos ha'galos she'atidim Yisrael la'alot la'eretz Yisrael. That it's the journey of the Jewish people from the exile going up towards the land of Israel. Ve'ilu ashirim nemur alashon b'nei ha'galut kulam. That all of these chapters are referencing the people as they are in exile. Okay, that's the way the Radak reads this entire chapter of Tehillim. We'll see that others do not read it the same way. But clearly there's some form of a conversation taking place here. Me'ayin yavo Ezri, where's my help going to come from? Pasuk Bet, Ezri me'im Hashem, Oseh Shamayim V'aretz, my help is going to come from Hashem, the creator of the heavens and the earth. The Malbim points out, why do we refer to Hashem specifically here as the creator of the heaven and earth? Why can't it just say, Ezri me'im Hashem, that my help comes from Hashem? So the Malbim says, very beautifully, Rotza lomar oseh ha-teva, uma shehu lamala min ha-teva. That God created nature, and God also creates that which is above nature. She'anhagas ha-teva miyaches la-oseh ha-shamayim, umanhigal pi ha-shamayim shehu ha-marechet. Ve'anhagas ha-pliya miyaches la-oseh ha-shamayim ha-meg v'koach shelamala mehem. Right, that God relates to the world in two different realms. We human beings are bound by nature. We're limited in what we are able to accomplish. We're bound by physicality, by our finite nature. Okay, God is not bound by any of that. God is infinite. Which means, says the Malbim, when we connect ourselves to Hashem, what we're essentially saying is that although me, Philip Moskowitz, is limited, I am finite, when I connect myself to Hashem, I now connect myself to the capacity of infinity. I connect myself to something, someone, that is able to transcend nature. And so if you think about the nature, again, we don't know what's bothering the writer of this chapter of Tehillim yet, but you can surmise already, right? He's obviously in a difficult situation. Me'ayin yavo Ezri. When a person wonders, where's my help going to come from? It's because of what? They obviously feel like there's no way out. They're in a precarious situation. They have their backs against the wall. And they wonder to themselves, Me'ayin yavo Ezri, where in the world am I going to get help from? There's no logical way that I'm going to be removed from this difficult situation. And then he says, Ezri me'im Hashem, my help's going to come from Hashem, Oseh Shamayim V'aretz. When I connect myself to Hashem, I connect myself to someone that is not bound by nature. And so therefore, while the laws of nature dictate that X, Y, and Z are likely to happen, Hashem is able to transcend nature. What do we say in our sitter every single morning? This would be helpful if I had a sitter here. No one has a sitter here? Here, let's see. I'll find. Hold on. This is why we have apps on our phone. Okay? It used to be the old-fashioned way. Ah. So I'll read you a beautiful thing. We say it every morning. It's not even in my notes, but I just thought of it right now. We say every morning in the Birchos Kriya Shema, the Brachos, that we say right before Shema. And we say something amazing. We say, let me get to it. Okay. We say, Kel Baruch Nimot Itenu, that we're going to offer sweet melodies to Hashem. L'melech El Chai V'Kayam. We acknowledge that God is El Chai V'Kayam. In other words, He's a live God. He didn't just create the world and check out, but He's actively, intimately involved in our life. And then what do we say? Ki hu levado poel gvorot, oseh hadashot, right? That God, because He's actively involved in our life, so He is poel gvorot, He does mighty deeds, oseh hadashot, Which means what?
New stuff.
Baal Milchamot, Zarei Tzedakot, Matzmiach Yeshua. In other words, God is able to create new things. Matzmiach Yeshua. What is the word matzmiach?
Plant.
Plant means that I don't see it happening, and all of a sudden, one day, poof, it happened. Right? So God is able to set into motion things that I don't see in front of me, but can happen. Borei Refuot. God creates healing, refua. He does all these amazing things. Why? Because HaMechadesh B'tuvo B'chol Yom Tamim HaSei B'Rishit. Because God is constantly recreating the world. In other words, my logic dictates that certain things are implausible to happen. Right? Certain things look naturally like they're going to happen, and yet we believe that because God is HaMechadesh B'tuvo B'chol Yom Tamim, that because God is constantly recreating the world, because God exists L'mala Min HaTeva, therefore anything is plausible. Anything is possible. Okay? We say Tehillim in the most absurd situations. Right? Someone is sick. Someone, Alpiteva, is not going to experience a refuah. And yet, what do? We do something absurd. We continue to say Tehillim. Yeah. Someone came up to me a couple of months ago. This was amazing. He said, Rabbi, why do we still say the Mishaberach for the soldiers that are missing in action? I said, it's absurd. Right? They've been missing for 30 years. Why do we still say Tehillim for it? Now, this happened to be, he asked me that question the week before they found Zachary Bauman. Wow. Mm. A week before. Wow. But what was my answer to him?
Never give up.
My answer to him is, that's part of our DNA. Right? Maybe logically, 99.9% certainty, you're right. It's illogical that we're doing. But part of the DNA of a Jew is to believe that even though logically something doesn't make sense, we connect ourselves to an entity that is illogical. God is illogical. Faith is illogical. The Jewish people are illogical. It makes no sense that we're here. 2,500 years of exile. And the Romans and the Greeks, right? We all know that story. That's all illogical. But the answer is that because we are connected to an Ose Shamayim Va'aretz, we are connected to Hashem that creates the heavens and earth, anything is possible. That's what it's allowed us to persevere throughout all of those years of exile and hardship. And so that's exactly what the Malbim is saying over here when we say, Ezri Me'im Hashem, my help can come from Hashem. Why do I believe that help can come from Hashem? Me'ayin Yavo Ezri, I'm in a place where I have no reason to believe that help is plausible. But why? Because Oshei Shemayim V'aretz, because Hashem created the heavens and the earth. Hashem is not bound by logic. Hashem is not bound by nature. When you and I see something and we say, we're caught between a rock and a hard place. There's no way out. We put our faith in Hashem, and therefore anything is possible. That's part of our faith. And even though we know with 99.9% certainty that it's not going to work out the way that we want, or the outcome won't be the way that we want, part of faith is believing in Hashem. Part of faith is believing in the Osei Shamayim V'aretz. Part of faith is believing that we connect ourselves to someone that is Al Pi Teva, that is above nature, and that is not bound by nature. Okay, so that's all just a beautiful insight by the Malbim. Pasuk Gimel, Al Yitein Lamot Raglecha Al Yanum Shomrecha. So this is a continuation. From here on out, basically, is all a response to that first question of Me'ayin Yavo Ezri. So we put our faith in Hashem, and now Al Yitein Lamot Raglecha, Hashem's not going to allow your foot to falter, Al Yanum Shomrecha. Nor is your Shomrecha, your guardian, going to sleep. Okay, now obviously that imagery is very powerful. Okay, every now and then you read the, my wife still likes to read the New York Post. Right, it connects her to New York. She says news in Florida is too boring. She needs like a good crime in the middle of New York City to get her going. Okay, so all you need to do is go to the New York Post to know that every now and then there's like an expose about a police officer that was caught sleeping on the job. Right, that they catch him at 3 in the morning with the donut in one hand and he's fast asleep in the other hand. And that's the expose. That's not a good thing. You don't want your police officers sleeping at 3 in the morning. Okay, when you hire a guard, when you hire someone to watch over you, so you want them to be watching 24/7. The Radak says, based on his thesis, that this is all the Jewish people in the exile, he says, what does it mean, Al Yanum Shomrecha? Ki bios hagalus. That while we're in the exile, domet lishan, it appears as if Hashem is sleeping. OK, Okay, it's as if Hashem is sleeping at the wheel. There's no one in charge. How could it be that X, Y, Z, pogroms, crusades, Holocaust, how could it be that it all happened? Says the Radak, Ayanum Shomrecha. We should never for a moment think that Hashem is sleeping. And even when we don't perceive Hashem's providence over our lives, He is there the entire time, awake and aware. Now, I want to connect this to this week's Parsha. It's an idea I shared last week in the Parsha, last year in the Parsha class, but it ties in beautifully to this exact point of Hashem lo yanum, which we'll get to the next pasuk, which says, let's just read two more psukim. Hinei lo yanum velo yishan shomer Yisrael. He doesn't sleep, he doesn't slumber. Yanum and yishan are different words, right? Different types of sleep. Okay, shomer Yisrael, he is the guardian of the Jewish people. Again, even in exile, Hashem guards us. Adonai shomrecha, Hashem is our guardian. Hashem tzilcha yadi minecha, he is our shadow. We'll get to that imagery in a second. Okay, so clearly, 3, 4, and 5 is all this notion of God is our guardian. Okay, even when He appears to be sleeping, He is our guardian. In this week's Parsha, so we're introduced to the Nechash Nechoshet. So the snakes come and they bite the Jewish people. Vayishalach Adonai ba'am et ha-nechashim hasrafim. Hashem sends these snakes, these serpents. Vayinashchu et ha'am, they bite the people. Vayamat amrav miYisrael. I remember when I was practicing for my bar mitzvah parsha, that was a tongue twister. Vayishalach Hashem ba'am et ha-nechashim hasrafim vayinashchu. It was just like a lot of
seashells.
Yeah, exactly. Seashells by the seashore. Okay. He points out over here. This is in Rav Drukman's Sefer, that Vayishalach means to, we would say, to
send.
But he says that's not the actual translation, that there are two words. What would mean to send? Vayishlach. Vayishlach is not the same as Vayishalach. Okay? Vayishlach, as in Vayishlach Yaakov Malachim, Yaakov sends angels. It's a proactive sending. When Yosef is sent to the brothers, it says, Vayishlachehu me'emecharon. They sent him. It's an act of sending. Vayishalach, he says, means something different. Let me give you a good one. When he sends the angel, it says, Vayishalach et ayona meito. Noach doesn't send the angel, the dove. What does he do? He's holding back the dove. He releases the dove. Okay? Vayhi b'shalach paro et ha'am. Paro doesn't, right? B'shalach paro et ha'am. He doesn't send Paro. What does it mean? It means Paro was like wanting to go, and he allowed Paro to go. Right? Almost picture like a dog on a leash who's ready to lurch. Right? This is my nightmare. See a guy? Penny will appreciate this. Story, a guy was walking home in Florida last week, took the wrong path, and was bitten to death by dogs.
Oh my God.
When I say, like, that is my worst nightmare, I mean, that is my worst, although I had a crazy nightmare the other night, but it had to do with my cell phone. It was really embarrassing. Ariel told me I need therapy. I basically had a nightmare that someone stole my phone, like pickpocketed me, and like that to me was the worst tragedy. But worse than that is being mauled by a dog, okay? So right, you picture a dog on a leash. When you let go of that leash, you're not sending the dog. You're releasing. You're allowing the dog to do what they want to do. So Rav Drukman says that's the difference between vayishalach, where you're releasing, versus vayishlach, where you're sending. So here in our parsha, it says vayishalach Hashem ba'am. God is releasing the snakes. What that means is, yeah?
In defense of dogs. No. They will do whatever their master tells them. That means that there was somebody that was teaching those dogs how to attack.
That helps you sleep better at night.
They were just roaming.
If that helped, they were roaming. They were roaming.
Someone's property.
All right. If that makes you sleep better. Vayishalach Hashem ba'am. When Hashem is releasing the snakes, it's an amazing idea. It means the snakes were there the whole time. The whole time we were in the desert. The snakes were there, ready to pounce on the Jewish people. And who was protecting us?
Hashem.
Now, did Bnei Israel appreciate that Hashem was protecting them the entire time? No. They took it for granted. So Vayishalach, all of a sudden, the Jewish people realized that danger that was lurking there the whole time, Hashem was protecting them. They didn't even realize it. Right? The story of our people is that we see what we see in front of us, but we don't appreciate what Hashem does behind the scenes. The whole time they were in the desert, the snakes were there. They were ready to bite. Hashem was protecting them the entire time. All of a sudden, Hashem releases the snakes so that Bnei Israel only now appreciate the miracles that Hashem had been doing the whole time. When we thought Hashem was sleeping, Hashem was really protecting us. Right? We have that later on in the Parsha as well. When we come to Edom, and Rashi very famously tells us that Edom had given us permission, Emor had given us permission to go pass through their land, mm-hmm. and that they crossed between Emor on one hand and Edom on the other hand, and there were mountains, the Pasuk says, very high up, and that they had hidden in the mountains, and they had anticipated that as the Jewish people were crossing through, they were going to ambush the Jewish people and kill them. And Rashi, there, based on the Gemara, says that there was this miracle that the mountains crushed themselves together, squashing all the enemies of the Jewish people, separated, and Bnei Israel crossed through. What's amazing about the story that Rashi quotes is that Bnei Israel have no clue that that miracle happened. When do they find out the miracle happened? So again, the Gemara quotes that there was a stream right behind them, and the stream was flowing with blood. And it was only two lepers that were on the outskirts of the camp of the Jewish people because they were sent into, they were ostracized, so to speak. They saw the blood and they came back to the Jewish people and said, "Whoa, whoa, wait a second, you guys missed it. There was this massive miracle that just happened and you didn't even see it." Right? But what's the message again? Hashem had saved the Jewish people. They had no clue that they were being saved. Hashem lo yanu v'lo yishan. Hashem is never sleeping. Even when we can't see it, Hashem is helping us. Next week's Parsha, the same exact thing. Bilam and Balak have this entire plot to kill the Jewish people. Bnei Israel have no clue it's taking place. Right? Bilam is perched over a cliff overlooking the camp of the Jewish people. He's trying to curse them. Hashem is saving them. Bnei Israel have no clue that's happening. That's the story of our lives. We see what's in front of us, but we have no clue what's happening behind the scenes that Hashem does to protect us every moment of every day. I quoted last year, Rabbi Frand, a beautiful idea. We say in Shmoneh Esrei, right? Melech Ozer Umoshia Umagein. That Hashem helps us, Ozer, Moshia, He saves us, and He protects us. Seems very redundant. Says Rabbi Frand, no. That Ozer and Moshia are things that we see in front of us. Right? I see I'm in threat. Hashem Ozer. Hashem helps me from that threat. What's Magain? Magain is even those things that I don't see, Hashem is protecting me from on a constant basis. That is what our chapter of Tehillim is talking about. When we say, Al Yanum Shomrecha, that your guardian, your protector, is never sleeping. Hinei lo yanum v'lo yishan shomer Yisrael. That He's never sleeping, He's never slumbering. It means that even when we doubt God's existence, even when we doubt that God is engaged and involved in expressing providence over our lives, in Magain, He's protecting us, Hashem lo yanum v'lo yishan. Part of our emunah is the belief that He is never sleeping, that He is never slumbering. Rav Hirsch points out, and he's going to point this out in a number of different cases, but he says we're not just talking here about physical protection, but we're talking about spiritual protection as well. He says in Pasuk Gimel, all the forces in power that tower over men can give them nothing more than physical and mechanical protection. I can put myself in a protective bubble. Okay? Since they themselves are not free but subject to limitations, they can do nothing for the course of life which is morally free. In other words, Hashem just doesn't protect us physically, but He protects us spiritually as well. That when the forces of the world take us and take the world in ways that are so morally destructive, Hashem protects us spiritually. Okay, which is a beautiful idea to think about as well. Okay? In Pasuk, In Pasuk Hey, we say Hashem Shomrecha, Adonai Tzilcha Yad Yimenecha, that God is our shadow. So the commentaries point out that our deeds, God is like our shadow. What happens to your shadow? Well, when you move a certain way, what happens to your shadow? It mimics you. It follows your actions. Hashem reflects our actions. When we act in a certain way, So we believe that Hashem reflects those actions, that those actions have cosmic implications, that they influence the world around us. That's the notion of schar mitzvah mitzvah, that the reward of a mitzvah is a mitzvah. Again, the reward for my action is that Hashem is then going to mimic my action. Hey, if I act in a certain way, Hashem meets me where I am. B'derech sha'adam molichin, right? The way that a person goes, so Hashem allows the person to go in that direction. You want to take a certain path, Hashem will enable you to take a certain path. Okay, so that's that notion, that beautiful notion, that Hashem is our shadow, that He follows us, He mimics our actions, that if we act in a certain way, Hashem will respond in like. Okay, we say in Pasuk Vav, Yomam Hashemesh lo yakeka v'yareach balayla, that in the daytime, the sun will not harm us, and in the nighttime, the moon will also not harm us. So what's that talking about? So the Malbim says, Tishmur merat Hashemesh bayom, umerat hayareach balayla. Again, He's going to protect us from the sun during the day, and from the moon at night. Hagam shetiv'eyam mitnagnim ze laze, cham v'yavish ze kar v'lach. Is right, they're opposites from each other. Nonetheless, Hashem shomrecha tiyashmira so b'shnei anyanim. Hashem is going to protect us in two different ways. Shmira taguf, that's Hashem yishmorcha mikora. Hashem is going to protect us physically, and shmira tanefesh mechet, that's Hashem yishmorcha yishmor esnafshecha. The next pasuk, right? Hashem yishmorcha mikora yishmor esnafshecha. He doesn't again just protect us physically, but He protects us spiritually, which the Malbim says is He protects us from sin. The Malbim continues with his theme here, where he says, the protection which Hashem will give you is not limited in any fashion. He will preserve you from all manner of evil, physically, spiritually, and socially. Above all, He will guard your soul, so that the spiritual part of your being will not lose its purity, and it will remain worthy of His protecting in blessed nearness. Okay, so we believe again in this world where we oftentimes sway certain, it sways us, it sways our morals, it sways our ethics, it sways our values. You only need to look around America nowadays to appreciate what happens when you don't have that protection. So the guarantee of the psalmist here is that Hashem will protect us physically as well, spiritually as well. One final point, and then we'll obviously start tying it all together, is Rav Hirsch. Rav Hirsch says, really, I think it's a beautiful idea, where it says, Hashem shomrecha, Hashem tzilcha ayad yiminecha. Again, Hashem is going to protect you. He's our keeper. The sun and the moon. Sun represents what type of experience? When you're happy. Prosperity. Things are going right for you. Okay? Moon is what period of life?
Light,
it's
low,
the darkness.
Low.
It's when things aren't going well. It's when things are looking bleak. Says Rav Hirsch that Hashem, if the Lord is your keeper, if when the sun of prosperity stands at your right hand, He is also your shade, so that the glitter of good fortune will not dazzle you and make you arrogant, then the sun of the day of joy will not harm you. In other words, we assume that Hashem only protects us when things go bad. Okay? Something's going bad, Hashem, I ask you for protection. But we equally need protection when things are going right. Because we are arguably in as much danger in times of prosperity as we are in times of difficulty. In fact, one could very easily make the argument that Jewish history has shown that counterintuitively, the Jewish people have done better during hard times than during good times. It's a fact. The greatest periods of Jewish scholarship did not take place when times were good.
True.
Took place when times were bad. Rabbeinu Tam, a lot of the Rishonim wrote when they are on the run from the Crusades. Those were the greatest moments of spirituality, of Jewish scholarship. It's when things are going well that what happens to us, exactly as the Torah predicts, well, you sit back. Things are going well. We can be friendly with our neighbors. We can become complacent. We can take in the affluence and sit back on our laurels, as they say. And that's when trouble happens. Think about 20th century Judaism. Right? Argue, and Danny Gordis makes this argument at the beginning of his book, God is Not in the Fire, where he says that one of the great tragedies of our generation is that for 2,000 years, the Jewish people have yearned for a time when they could choose their Judaism. Our Judaism was always forced upon us. We didn't have a choice. You were a Jew because your enemy next door, the non-Jew next door, hated your guts so much that he reminded you all the time that you were a Jew. All of a sudden, we come to the 20th century, certainly the second part of the 20th century, experience unprecedented prosperity, affluence, religious freedom, religious choice, certainly here in America. And again, without getting too blunt, what is America? What have we done with that affluence and that prosperity? Yes, there are segments of Judaism which have taken it and built Torah institutions and reinforced a Jewish lifestyle, but the Jewish people en masse have not related well to the affluence and prosperity and religious freedom of the 20th century. When given the choice for the first time in 2,000 years of whether to be Jewish or not, unfortunately, the majority of Jews have chosen not. And that's one of the great tragedies. It's not my point. Danny Gordas, the beginning of his wonderful book, God is Not in the Fire. That's the point that he makes. That's the point that he laments, right? And that's exactly what, according to Rav Hirsch, we're saying here in Tehillim, that Hashem guards us not just when the Yareach, not just in the bad times. That we all know we need God's protection in the bad times. But we need God's spiritual protection in the good times also. That's when we have to be careful. Hold on. I'll share with you a beautiful idea. Magnificent. Okay, Rav Menachem ben Zion Zaks writes in his Sefer, we say two lines when we take out the Torah and when we return the Torah. When we take out the Torah, we say, Vayhi binsoa aron, when the aron is on the move. Okay? And what do we say when we put back the Torah? Uvnucha yomar. Shuva Hashem, Revos Alfei Israel, right? Uvnucha yomar, when the Torah is settled. Now, obviously, we say those words because when we take out the Torah, the Torah is moving. Vayhi binsoa aron. When we put the Torah back, it's now settled. Uvnucha yomar. Now it's resting. But Ben Zion Sachs, or Menachem Ben Zion Sachs says, now, that's a tefillah to Hashem. Vayhi binsoa aron. At the moments in Jewish history when we were on exile, when we were running away from our enemies, when we were being chased, that's when we needed God's protection, right? Vayhi binsoa aron, vayom rashe, kum Hashem. Stand up, Hashem. Vayafutso evecha. Scatter all of our enemies. But, says Rav Zaks, the Chiddush is, even uvnucha yomar, even when the Torah is stable, even when the Jewish people aren't on the run, and we're experiencing that prosperity and that affluence and that calmness, even then, we need Hashem's protection. Right? We all know we need Hashem's protection in Vayhi binsoa aron, when we're being chased during the pogroms, the Crusades, the Holocaust. We know that. But it's even the uvnucha yomar, even during the moments of goodness, the fat years, as we say, even then, we need Hashem's protection because of exactly Danny Gordas' point. Because prosperity and affluence and tranquility hasn't always been, we always haven't captured that opportunity, let's put it that way, made the most of that opportunity. Again, I think a really beautiful idea from Rav Hirsch. Okay, what are we talking about here? What are we talking about here? So I think on the most basic level, we're talking about every single one of us, right? This is a chapter of Tehillim that is not ascribed to any one person. It's not Maskila David, Shir Mizmor La David. It's none of that. It's Shir Lamalos. It is talking to someone, as we said, who is low and yearning to ascend. He's craving the opportunity to get out of the depths emotionally, spiritually, physically. And so he looks to Hashem. And in that way, this chapter of Tehillim is every single one of us. It's every single one of us at those moments in life when you feel down and we're looking to Hashem to pick us up. Okay? Me'ayin yavo ezri. Ezri, right? Esayinai el arim. Why are you looking up to the mountains? Okay? So a mountain, if you think about it, is daunting. Right? When you're down here and the mountain is up there, there is nothing that looks harder to accomplish than that mountain. You are so small, the mountain is so big, the mountain is unconquerable, okay? And yet, when you get to the top of the mountain, through hard work, through effort, what do you experience? Well, acceleration, this beautiful view, this vista. You're able to see the path that you took to get to that point, right? That's the imagery of a mountain. A mountain is very hard to climb, but once you get to the top, so there's this exhilarating experience. Exhilarating experience once you're at the top, because you're able to see how that windy path got you there. So asa'inai el ha'arim, you're like looking upwards, and you have no clue how you're going to conquer it. And the only thing at that moment in time, when life seems so bleak and dark, is Ezri Me'im Hashem, right? Is that notion that even though there's nothing logical that's going to help me, it's that faith, it's that emuna in Hashem. I think that's the clearest, most obvious interpretation of all this. The Das Mikra, and I think other commentaries as well, the Ibn Ezra, for example, read this a little bit differently. And they read this entire chapter of Tehillim as the chapter of Tehillim that someone says as they're leaving on a journey. Okay, which is why Mali, as I said earlier, reads it when she is going on an airplane. Because if you look at Tefillah Sederach, at the end of Tefillah Sederach, is this chapter of Tehillim. This is why. Okay, so the Das Mikra points out, Kasav ze nemar belashon adam hayotzi laderech ha'overes beharim. It's a person who's going out on this pathway. Now, we don't appreciate this, because for us that means I'm getting in my car, I'm going to Publix. Going on a journey back then was not a simple matter. Okay? There were no cell phones. You couldn't even do like what I, you know, when I grew up. So we didn't have cell phones even when I grew up. Okay? But what we did, you had that like collect call. But you never had money on you. So you had that thing where you'd call collect and they'd say your name and they'd say, Mom, pick me up at CVS. Right? And then your mother would reject the call because she didn't want to spend the money. But she knew you needed to be picked up at CVS. Okay? And you'd sit there waiting, hoping that she got the message. I mean, that's... They didn't even have that. Okay? I can't even fathom a world before that. Okay? So when you went out on a journey, it wasn't like a 1 or 2 day thing. You were going out for days, weeks, sometimes months on end. Right? Think about the Greek tragedies that you would read, or the Odyssey or whatever. So these were journeys that lasted 6 months, a year, okay? And it was an arduous journey. You were exposed to the elements. You didn't have your car. You didn't have Holiday Inns to stay in or Ritz-Carlton's to stay in. I mean, you were left to the elements, and there was no guarantee that you came back. In fact, if you look at many of the writings of Agunas, right, a woman who, it was because they just didn't know what happened to the husband. He went out on a journey, never returned, and you didn't know what happened to him. Okay? So he says, this is the language of someone who's going out, and he's looking up at the mountains, like literally, he's looking up at the mountains, and he's saying, he asks himself, who's saving me from all of this? Who's protecting me from all of this? Who's helping me here? Okay? And therefore, what's the second part? The second part is, I don't need to look, right? So the second part is the answer. Pasuk Gimel is Al Yitain Lamot Raglecha. That your feet are not going to falter, he says. Ha'omer Pasuk Zeh, Hu Amevarech Et Hayotzei Laderech Bebirchas HaPreida. I feel that sense of fear, anxiety. Like, how am I going to get to my journey? And then in Pasuk Gimel, the guy sitting next to me responds. And he says, no, it's going to be okay. Here's my bracha to you. Al yitain lamot raglecha ayinim shamrecha. That your foot will not falter, that your guardian shall not slumber. In other words, you should be protected. And therefore, the Das Mikra reads this entire chapter as a conversation. Okay, I, the traveler, feel the anxiety. I'm about to go out on a journey. And you come along and you say, you put your arm around me and you say, it's going to be okay. Hashem's going to protect you. He says, again, at the end, in the summary, he says, She'amizmor mi karu birchas aderech, liyotzi laderech rechoko ha'overes beinarim. I'm about to go on a long journey. Hu yotzi mi beso. I'm about to leave my house. V'chaveiro, o aviv, o moro v'rabo, and someone, whether it's a parent or a friend or a teacher, holeich imo l'sholcho. He starts escorting me out. He walks me out of the house. And as I'm looking out at those mountains, and I feel that fear, right? He says, Hamishalech omei lashuv l'mekomo. I want to get back in the house. And what do you say to me? You start giving me encouragement. You start giving me that strength, the fortitude, the emuna that I will be successful. Now, why do I love that? And I think it actually ties beautifully into our first interpretation. Because what it does is it means that when I feel that fear or that anxiety, again, whether physically someone's actually going on a journey or we're on the journey of life, who comes to reinforce me? It's someone else, right? It's a friend. It's a teacher. It's a family member. Okay, that very famous study that I know we've quoted many times, which in it is this chapter of Tehillim. When a person sits at the bottom of a mountain, they look up, so the mountain seems very tall. And they've done research that if a person sits at the bottom of the mountain and a friend is standing next to him, and then they ask the person how tall the mountain is, they think of it as much lower than they did when they were standing alone. Now, nothing changed. Right? The mountain's the exact same mountain. I'm standing at the bottom of the same mountain. You haven't helped me in anything. All you did was stand at my side. And that mountain, again, this is not me. This is research, David Pelkowitz, okay? Right? The research shows that just having someone stand beside you at the bottom of that mountain makes the mountain feel lower than it actually is. That is the chapter of Tehillim, right? The conversation that's taking place here is I feel like I'm low. The mountain is so high. May ayin yavo ezri. I lift up my eyes and I say, how in the world am I going to get through this? And who helps me? Who helps me realize how I'm going to get through it? It's my friend. It's my sibling. It's my parent. It's my teacher. It's my neighbor. That person simply standing next to me and saying, al yitein lamot raglecha. No, it's going to be okay. I'm going to put my arm around you. Hashem will help you get through this. Did that person actually change anything about my situation?
No.
No. Is my back still against the wall?
Yes.
But just them standing there and giving me that reinforcement, giving me that encouragement, makes the mountain seem a lot lower than it actually is.
That's what Bikur Cholim is all about.
That's what Bikur Cholim is all about. That's what Nichum Aveilim is all about. Right? The moments, and I don't want to give away too much. Oh, this would have been perfect for this class. No, because I can't, because then I'll regret it. I'm going to speak about this a little bit on Shabbos. So I can't. I just realized I'm going to speak about it a little bit on Shabbos. No, I can't. But it's Bikur Cholim. It's, so you'll get the notes from those who are here. So it's Bikur Cholim. It's Nichum Aveilim. Yeah, it's when a person is in need, it's that person sitting next to you that sometimes doesn't even say a word, right? But sometimes it's a glance that they'll give you. Sometimes it's the way they look at you. Right? Makes you feel better. That's exactly what this chapter of Tehillim is. And I think that's what makes this so powerful. Because if you read it, like the Das Mikra, and like so many other commentaries, that it's a conversation, if you think about it, the responder didn't help the guy at all. He's still sitting at the bottom of a big mountain. He's still facing that unconquerable task. And yet, just the fact that a guy sits next to me and says, Al-Yitin Lamot Raglecha, Inum Shamrecha, it's okay, Hashem is with you, I'm by your side, that makes whatever problem, whatever difficulty I'm facing, seem a lot easier and a lot less daunting. And I think that's why this chapter of Tehillim has really become such a rallying cry for people in time of need, whether it's illness, whether it's distress, whether it's physical traveling, and you do whatever moment in life causes you that anxiety. I think hopefully now I've elucidated why this chapter is read and why it could become so powerful, what it means for the person going through it, and perhaps even more importantly, what it means for the friend of a person who's going through it. Oftentimes, we can't solve the other person's problem. And that makes us feel powerless. And that sometimes leads us to believe, well, why should I bother if I can't really help them at all? What's me going to help the person? What's my, showing up at the end? But we should appreciate that the mere presence, that sometimes the glance, the word, just the emotional support that you give a person can turn the esayinai el ari mi'ayin evo ezri, that daunting feeling of how I'm going to get through it, to suddenly this notion of Hashem yishmor seischavo echa me'atav yad olam, that knowledge, that awareness, that deep emuna that's embedded into every fiber in my being, that Hashem is going to protect me, that Hashem is going to save me when I can see it, when I can't see it, a lot of the ideas that we developed here today. Everyone have a phenomenal week. Those who are able